Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? Welcome to the Around the World podcast. I'm your host, Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more in the Around the World podcast. For this episode of the podcast, I sat down to talk with Ben Ochner from Germany. I have to apologize. This one's coming out a couple months after we recorded it. We were in India at the time. It's just been a really busy summer for me. But I think this was a really interesting show. Instead of me interviewing Ben, Ben interviewed me. So we got to learn a little bit more about my own history and motivations for travel. So sit back and enjoy my conversation with Ben Ochner.
Hello, everyone. We're going to try something a little different this time. Instead of me asking most of the questions and interviewing someone else, I am going to be interviewed. I'm here with Ben. Oh, I already forgot your last name again.
Ochner.
Ochner.
Yeah, hello, good afternoon.
From Germany?
Yes.
And sorry about that, Ben. It's just a hard name for me to memorize.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
Ochner. Yeah.
And like Loch Ness, but it's just like instead of the L,
yeah,
the O, Och.
Ochner.
Ochner. Lake Lochner. Okay. Ness.
Like
just something like that.
Lake Lochner S, and you are a monster of a man.
Yeah, that's my reputation.
All right, and we are sitting here in India in Himachal Pradesh is the state name. It's in the northern part of the country. Normally I'm based in China, but I'm coming here to India for about 5 or 6 weeks just for a little break before I head home to the States for the summer. And the reason I'm here is to go mountaineering. We have come out to this remote location.
It's called Chatru.
Chatru.
Chatru. Chatru.
And we're in what's called a daba, which is a tent, basically, a really big tent with a little shop in it. We have a very friendly man helping us with food and for now.
Basically in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, middle of nowhere, but... this is much better than sleeping in our tent, which we were in last night, because we have been experiencing pretty much nonstop rain, and that's why we have time to record this, and since we're not on the mountain today, and maybe we'll get up there in a few days. I've got plenty of time, so I'm not terribly worried, but the weather's kind of keeping us out for now. So let's get started, Ben. You wanted to ask me a few questions. What did you want to ask?
Yeah, I think I just want to start pretty early in your life. Like, where did you actually grow up?
Oh, I grew up in Wisconsin, in the United States, in a little town called Exonia. Just a few hundred people there.
High school, university, all the same place?
Yeah, pretty much. I went to high school in, it's called Oconomowoc, which is a Native American name, and it's a cool name for a town. It's got O, every other letter's an O, okay. Oconomowoc. And that's a suburb of Milwaukee, which is the biggest state in Wisconsin. And then I went to school in La Crosse, also in Wisconsin, on the Mississippi River. And actually, I spent 1 year at UW-Platteville when I was a young man at 18 years of age.
What's this place?
Platteville.
Never heard of this place.
Oh, it's also Wisconsin.
Also Wisconsin.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Southwestern Wisconsin.
Okay, and then university, which degree did you take?
Oh, computer science was my degree.
Computer science.
Yeah. Oh,
undergrad, and then...
That was it. Undergrad, and then I went out to Minnesota, a few hours away, and I got a job at IBM right out of school.
Okay, and so how old were you when you finished uni? 21?
22. 22? I just turned 22, and it was an interesting period in my life, because before then, I didn't really have any money. I mean, I was always working minimum wage jobs. I worked at a gas station for a while.
After uni?
No, this is during uni. Yeah. I'd work third shift at a gas station, do my homework at night at 3 in the morning when I wasn't busy. And just kind of barely made enough to get by and just maybe have a beer every now and then. And then as soon as I finished, I went into this great job at a proper company, and I was a full-time employee as a software engineer.
Did you like it? There must be some reason you moved to China and you're teaching now.
Yeah, yeah. So we should close like that gap. That's
just like a huge opportunity. Being in IBM, many people would be happy to get such a job. And it's like sitting in the stubble in the rain, covered in filthy blankets.
This is true. I gave up that comfortable life, didn't I? I'm
just very curious what happens in between. That's why I actually wanted to interview you.
Oh, okay.
There's lots of questions.
That's awesome.
I would like to ask the way to actually hear.
Well, at that point in my life, I was living a what you would consider a total normal life for an American.
It's like after uni, 22.
Yeah, go off to a job. And well, obviously not every American does this, but this is kind of the American dream, I think.
It's a Western world dream.
Or Western world dream,
okay. For most people, even in third world countries, they'd be happy to have a good job, daily basis, just like have enough money for the family.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, and
it's nothing to be ashamed about. It's like people like us, we're just like talking about this kind of life is something bad, but I think not many people find it's actually bad having a proper job every day,
right,
in life,
right.
Maybe six weeks leave per year.
Yeah. Oh, 6 weeks. You're obviously not American.
Yeah, yes, yeah. You've got that.
Yeah, no, I got 2 weeks. 6 weeks is a dream. That's after you're at a company for 25 years, you might get that.
That's
much.
That's ridiculous, yeah. I'm not going to move to the States.
Yeah.
I've got 30 days leave per year.
And I get 30 days.
And I can take, so when I work, I've got a 7-hour day or an 8-hour day.
Uh-huh.
And when I work 10 hours, that's the maximum I'm allowed to work. Not more.
You're not allowed to work more than 10?
No, my boss gets issues.
Whoa.
And that means if I've got like a 7-hour day, like a 35-hour week, I've got like 3 over hours on a 10-hour day.
Okay.
It makes I do this twice and almost got a day off. I can just like this,
wow.
The over hours go to an account. So last year, I was still on a 35-hour week, now I increased to 40 hours.
Yeah.
I had like 45 days off and an engineering salary, so I was complaining. It's like, the sun is shining, I just like can't go climbing now because of the work and things. Like, wait, it's actually quite luxurious. It's luxury.
So yeah, you gotta think about that. Like,
especially about when I think about my American friends, it's like 2 weeks leave.
Right, you get 2 weeks, you use one of them basically for Christmas and New Year's, and you get, yeah, you usually take a week off in the summer. It's pretty typical.
Did it feel like jail for you?
Yeah, it just, a lot of things felt like jail at the time. I mean, I wouldn't disparage that lifestyle now. Probably at the time, I was much more negative about it. But
okay, so you started your job when you were 22. How long did you do it?
Did it for 5 years.
5 years.
And I kind of just thought, this is it, because everyone I knew was either in that type of job or doing a job that made less money, or I didn't know any people who were doing the kind of things I was most interested in, which was traveling the world. And this is kind of still kind of in the early days of the internet. It was 2000, 2001 is when I got into it, and obviously the internet was around then, but they were nowhere near like the social networks that are around today. So I didn't really have a lot to go off of as far as other people, as far as mentors or things like that for how I wanted to live my life. So I kind of just had a lot of stuff in my head that didn't really get out there. And yeah, I worked at this job, and part of it was the city wasn't very fun. It was a small city, not exciting. But the good thing it was really good money. It was really good for my career, building it up and just figuring out how to work in a office environment instead of school, which are two very different things. But after probably 3 years of that, I put together a plan. I wanted to leave, and I wanted to save as much money as I could, and I wanted to get out and explore the world.
Have you been traveling before?
To Mexico. I went to Mexico a couple times during high school and then once during college. So that's what really got me into travel. And I just experiencing this totally different culture with people who didn't speak my language, and the freedoms associated with being so far from home that I just really fell in love with travel. But I kind of just thought it was something that you did as a more organized thing when you were in school, maybe as an exchange student. That's just kind of how I viewed it, because that was my circle of friends and everybody I knew. That's the most they ever did with respect to travel. So I put together this plan, kept working at it for 2 more years, just kind of pushed things, saving money, and just getting my life in order for this plan to work out. And then after 5 years, I decided to quit, I turned in my notice, and left my job and just said goodbye to everybody. And my real only plan at that time was to travel around South America. And I just bought a one-way ticket for Peru, for Lima, Peru.
Were you scared when you quit your job?
Yeah, like safety. Terrifying. It was
leaving behind.
I had everything. I was really excited, but I was terrified at the same time. Like, what's going to happen to me? And am I going to survive this trip? Where am I going to go? I have no direction here. I don't even have plans. Just a plane ticket, and I just really didn't know what was going to happen at all. And especially, I didn't know what was going to happen once I came home. Would I ever find a good job again? It's just
How long did you plan to travel when you left?
Well, a lot of people at the time asked me, how long are you going to be gone for? And I always told them 1 year. But that's just because by that point, I had found some forums online that dealing with long-term travel, around-the-world travel. And people tend to take off a year. I heard about the gap year at that time, because we don't have such a concept in the States. We don't have a gap year. And it's a year just seems like a nice round number to travel. So I always told people 1 year. But in actuality, I didn't really know, and I didn't know how long it would take to see these countries thoroughly. I didn't know how long it would take for my money to run out, or how long before I'd want to come home. I had never experienced the feeling of wanting to come home. At the end of every trip I had ever done, I wanted to keep going, and I couldn't. And this is my first opportunity to have an open-ended trip, no plane ticket home. No deadline, I could just keep going as long as I both wanted to and I had the money to do it, which is a great, liberating feeling. So I'd highly recommend to anyone to do it like that if you have the opportunity.
So now we're at year 27 in Dan's life. You've left your job?
Yeah, at 27, I took off. I flew to Lima and I was thrust into this new culture. I kind of just naively thought that South American culture would be very similar to Mexico, but now there are some huge differences. The language is the same, more or less, is Spanish.
What's the biggest difference? I've never traveled these countries.
A lot of culture, especially in Peru, where I started, is based on the Andes, at least the culture that you're going to be most interested in as a traveler. Because Lima is a big city on the coast. It was founded by the Spanish conquistadors, so it doesn't really have a lot of traditional character to it. It has pockets of it, but it's more of a nightlife kind of city in many ways. And it's kind of interesting, but the really interesting parts of Peru, at least when you're getting started, are in the south, in the southeast, in the mountains. And so the culture there is very much based on the descendants of the Inca Empire. And a lot of people there still speak Quechua. Some speak Aymara as their native language. They have to learn Spanish as a second language. And they've kept a lot of this stuff intact from the Inca culture. And they wouldn't consider themselves to be Inca people necessarily, but the heritage is still there. The ruins are still there. The sites, the Machu Picchu is there. The Cusco is this beautiful city with a mixture of Inca and colonial culture, architecture. Everything. It's really quite different from Mexico in that way.
And then, what's next?
So you just want to continue?
How old are you right now?
38.
38, so we could like...
Yeah, you've 11, got a big gap still to fill.
11 years to fill. Is it like mostly traveling?
Not entirely.
What's the place where you stayed the longest, like in one place? Is it China now, 2 years?
Yeah, it's China. I've been in China for almost 2 years. And although I've left a couple times and come back, but... Yeah. We'll just call it 2 years.
Okay. Let's quickly go through the countries you traveled.
Yeah, sure.
I just want to see them. It's like in order. It's like Peru was the first.
Yeah.
And then...
Peru, then... Yeah, I could just go through my whole trip.
Yeah.
I started in Peru for about a month, then through Bolivia for about 3 weeks. And then I went into Chile, and started in Arica, which is the northernmost town in Chile. Mm-hmm. Went all the way down into the northern part of Patagonia, which... That's the southern part of South America.
Yeah.
So Chile's a very long country. I spent about a month going through it and then crossed over into Argentina. And the reason I did that is basically because the roads run out eventually in Chile, so you have to go to Argentina. Not that Argentina was bad, it was awesome. So I started in Bariloche in Argentina, then went further south all the way down to the southern part of Patagonia, around El Chalten and the Fitzroy Mountain Range, yeah. which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Did you do some mountaineering there?
Nah, that was before I had ever climbed anything. So, but I did some hiking and I got a good look at it.
Love to go there, but I'm just like a bit scared of the weather. It's being trapped there like in a similar place like here, but just like strong winds.
Even
fierce conditions.
That area, I was in that area for about a week. And the first day, it was just perfect blue skies. I could see the Fitzroy perfectly, even from the village from El Chalten. It was awesome. And then the next 6 days were just cloudy and rainy and just horrible. So it gets a lot of bad weather. Anyway.
We should order some tea.
Oh, yeah. We're at this Daba and we've been drinking a lot of chai today.
And it's raining outside and the tent is not really what I call a tent. It's just like a dry stone wall and it's like...
It's a tarp covering us.
Just tarp.
Yeah. Hey, we're dry. You can't complain.
Yeah, that's true. But a tea would be nice.
Okay, we're going to get some tea and we'll continue.
okay, South America. You basically covered the whole place, didn't you?
Yeah. I'm only getting started. That's only the first 3 months out of 2.5 years.
So, two and a half years, South America.
Yeah. Well, the last 3 months of it or so were Central America. Mm-hmm. And... if you don't want me to, it's going to be hard to cover the whole trip. I'll try my best. Let's do that.
I'm interested.
After spending time in Argentinian Patagonia, I went over to Chile and did some hiking around there in I can't even remember the name now. The big national park there, the Torres del Paine, that's what it's called. So I did the circuit there. That was like a week. That's when I really got into trekking and hiking in general. And then from there went to Ushuaia, the southernmost city in the world, and that's at the very bottom of South America.
Okay.
And from there, I got a cheap...
This is where James Cook cut through the ship, and he always... volcanoes and stuff.
You've got a ton of history there with these early explorers. It's right on the Beagle Channel. Mm-hmm. Where the HMS Beagle sailed through, that's where Ushuaia is with Charles Darwin, and then you've got Cape Horn right below that, and there's a ton of history. And from
sounds like a wild place.
Yeah, it's wild. It's beautiful. It's fantastic. You should go for sure. It's the prime season is December, January, February, so it's when it's kind of nasty in Europe and not as nice. So
we are now in the very south of South America. You've been traveling for how long?
About 3 months.
Okay, and how did you keep yourself busy during the day? Just like hiking, or did you get bored?
It depended on where I was. If I was in a bigger city, I went out and had drinks and danced and all that good stuff. Argentina has a great nightlife culture. Things don't even get started till 2 in the morning there.
Okay.
And they go all night. But if I was... In a town or something. I loved hiking. I got into this trekking. Got into doing stuff without a guide. But then there's more touristy things that there's a well-worn backpacker trail that people go and do.
Okay, let's proceed. I want to get back to this question later on when you're feeling on the road.
I was as far south as you could go in South America, and so there are only two options: either go further north or go back north or go further south. And I chose to go further south. I found a really cheap last-minute ticket to Antarctica on a cruise ship. So that was like a two-week trip. We went from Ushuaia, Argentina, down to Antarctica and spent 4 days there hiking around the glaciers and seeing the penguins and seals and just a ton of wildlife. And we stayed at a scientific research base that the Chilean government runs. And we got to see Elephant Island, where Ernest Shackleton landed with his crew, and so that was a very famous story. And although I didn't get to walk on it because the sea is just far too rough there, but just seeing it, and that's really what got me into Shackleton to begin with. And from there, we went up to the Falkland Islands, or the Islas Malvinas, as they're known in Argentina, and spent a couple of days there. Then up to Uruguay. And spent a day there in Montevideo, and then across to Buenos Aires. And so I was back in Argentina. I spent another maybe 6 weeks to 2 months traveling around northern Argentina did a big loop.
Did you have travel companions? So was it just like people just like for a couple of days, which went the
off
same
and on.
Route?
Sometimes I did. Sometimes I was alone for extended periods for a couple of weeks. Usually I'd travel with someone for a few days.
Do you like being by yourself? Do you enjoy this?
Yeah, but only for short bursts. I kind of need it. I kind of need it. So,
what's the longest you've been like really alone?
Completely
just
alone?
Just by yourself, not talking
probably
to anyone?
Probably just 3-4 days. I've done a couple of hikes by myself for like 3 days, 4 days.
For me, it's probably pretty much the same, 4 days.
Yeah.
But that's about enough for me.
That's for me too. I actually heard an interview with the guy who supposedly is the world's most traveled person and ever. And he's like in his, he's probably about 50 by now. But when he was young, he's from Canada, and he would just go out for 6 months at a time alone. He'd throw a dart at a dartboard and at a map of Canada, and wherever it was, that's where he had to get to. And that sounded insane to me. But what he said was, when you come back after being alone in the wilderness, you need however much time you're gone for, you need that much time for your brain to like get back into all the stimulation of the civilized world, or so-called civilized world. So he would need 6 months just to get back into it. So for me, a few days is plenty. That's enough to clear my head.
Yeah, same for me. I just don't get any benefit of just being by myself a longer time.
Yeah. But at the same time, I kind of need it sometimes. Mm. Or even, not even necessarily in the wilderness, but even just sit in a hotel room all day and just relax, go on the internet, whatever. But yeah, getting back at it. Spent a few months in Argentina. Then, let's see, went up to Iguazu Falls and through into Paraguay. And I did a river trip.
Just hold on a second. I'll just get the rum.
We've just gotten our tea, and we're going to supplement that with a little adult beverage.
Yeah, to all listeners out there, if you ever come to India, buy some Old Monk. Very cheap, but very, very nice rum.
And just to let you know, this podcast is being sponsored by Old Monk Rum.
Delicious.
Yeah, just kidding, but if they want me to say that again, they'll have to pay me. Yeah, so then I went into Paraguay for about a week. That's one of the lesser traveled countries in South America. But I traveled up the...
For a good reason, or why is it less traveled?
Why is it less traveled? There's not a whole lot of spectacular sights to see there. I guess the one big place would be the Pantanal, which is a large grassland area where wildlife is much easier to see than in the jungle, and there's plenty of wildlife. However, you can also go into the Pantanal in Brazil, and I think most people choose to do that. So, yeah, it's just not, they don't get that many tourists, but I spent like 4 or 5 days on this boat going up the Paraguay River with the Guarani-speaking people of Paraguay, the natives who live there. And that river's really remote. None of the villages on it have any road access. So this one boat that goes up and down that river once a week is their only access to the outside world. So it was just overloaded with supplies, with chairs and with motorcycles. And at one point I saw them unload like 4 motorcycles onto a donkey cart, and the donkey cart drove the motorcycles away. The donkey walked the motorcycles away, shall we say.
So what are they doing with the motorcycles if there's no roads?
Once the economy gets better, hang them on the wall. They'd have roads within the villages.
Okay.
Just not connected to other places. So I found once the economy improves a little bit in these remote areas, one of the first things people buy after that, after they have bicycles, is motorcycles. And just really not powerful ones, like 125, 150cc engines.
Yeah, still better than walking.
Yeah, better than walking, and they can use them to cruise around in their town. And it's actually a huge step up, I'm sure, in comfort and lifestyle for them. So anyway, after Paraguay, I did this epic 40-hour or so bus ride that I told you about the other day.
Yeah, sounds awful.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Into Bolivia. And now I was back kind of on the scene again in Santa Cruz. But then spent the next maybe 2 months traveling around Bolivia again. And the reason I was back is the first time I didn't really see that much. I only saw a certain section of it. And that was with Craig, my new travel companion at the time. And we met in Antarctica, and he's from Australia, and we became really good friends after that. So we've hung out a lot of times, and so we did some more adventurous things. We traveled. We bought a dugout canoe together with another guy, and we paddled down this river for a couple weeks, down the river that borders Brazil and Bolivia, and stopped, camped in the little villages, and met people, and just kind of hung out in the jungle. Mm. And we did a few other things during that trip. And then at the end of that time in Bolivia is when I climbed my first mountain. And that was Huayna Potosí, which is 6,088 meters. And that's, to this day, still the highest I've ever gotten.
Yeah.
But I didn't even know anything at the time about mountaineering or climbing. I had just me and a guide. All I really had going for me is I have a lot of stamina. And I found out I can withstand the altitude pretty well, but I had zero technical skills.
Two good qualities to have as a mountaineer.
Yeah, I guess so. Two that you need, yeah. But very little physical strength in that realm, and no technical skills, but that's not a really technical mountain. It's the kind of thing where stamina will almost certainly lead you to the summit. So then I went back through Peru for about just a couple more weeks, and my brother was getting married at the time.
Again,
so,
Peru?
Yeah, because my brother was getting married at the time, and I wanted to fly home for it, and the cheapest ticket I could find was from Guayaquil, Ecuador. So I went through Peru to get to Ecuador, flew home, did that for 2 months, came back, and that began phase two of this trip. And so that now we're only about a third of the way in. God, this is taking forever, just describing it.
So South America was how long in total?
Two and a half years.
2.5 years.
Yeah.
Did you do all this traveling just for yourself, or did you ever have the feeling that you have to impress somebody at home? Your friends that are not as brave as you?
God.
To show them, what a tough traveler I am?
Yeah, I mean, if I am serious and admit it to myself, then yeah, I've had those thoughts. But overall, no, I just want to have fun. I just want to enjoy my life. Part of it is I saw my life pass me by. I mean, I was 25 and at this job that I've been at for a few years, and I could see, I mean, I had 40 years till I turned 65, but I could see that flying by, just at the same job, and it's just not what I wanted out of life. So I just decided that as much as financially feasible, I'm just going to do what I want to be fun in my life and just make the most of it, because it's the only shot I get at it. Yeah.
Okay, so, back to the States for the wedding.
Yeah, then back to Guayaquil. That was my round trip ticket. And once I was in Guayaquil, I traveled around Ecuador for a little bit. Then
you love South America, do you?
Yeah, this trip was all focused on South America. I wanted to really focus on one continent, because along the way, or I'll say it like this: when I got started, I knew next to nothing about how I was going to do this, what kind of gear I wanted to use, didn't know how to pack my backpack. I didn't know anything. And the way I learned is just doing it and seeing what works out well for me. But then the other thing I learned is talking to other people. And I met a lot of people who had bought round-the-world plane tickets. And it's the good thing about these are they're pretty cheap. They're not much more than a long international flight would cost. But then you get to stop off in three or four continents, and then within each continent, you basically fly standby for a few flights within the continent. So this is a good way to go see the world, in theory. The issues I had with it were it's only 1 year, I think, is the maximum you can do this. But then you just, everything goes by so fast. And so when I met people who were doing this, if I met them at the beginning of their trip, they tended to be all gung-ho, like, yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take a 12-hour bus ride today, see the city tonight, see the city tomorrow, and then the next night I'm going to take another 12-hour bus ride.
What's the right pace to travel at? I find this a very difficult question for myself as well. I'm rather inclined to squeeze in a bit more than just hanging out in a place that doesn't have too much to offer for three or four days.
That's
so, for example, if I look at Manali, town pretty close by where we just like stayed for 2 days, 1.5 days. Yeah, interesting to see, but I think I don't get much out of it if I stayed any longer. So would this be a place where you just like hang out for 2 weeks?
In Manali? Like, no way. Manali is so clogged with traffic. I couldn't handle it. And it's supposedly this quiet mountain town. But the town we were staying in Barshisht, if I had been traveling really fast for a while and then ended up in this cool little mountain town where everyone's friendly and there's plenty of beer and entertainment and just beautiful scenery, I could definitely stay there for like 5 days and just kind of chill out. But that's only if I really needed it, and I just got started. I don't really need it. And it's a really difficult question. What pace do you travel at? I've met people who are gung-ho and just wear themselves out. And that's what I was going to get at, is the people at the beginning of these round-the-world trips, I found they're just going, 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 going. And then people at the end, they're almost like, well, this is a great way for me to get to know some places I want to go back to and really explore thoroughly. But
that's a weird approach, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And then they realize that after a year. And I kind of saw that. And I thought, well, I don't really want that to happen to me. I want to go to South America, travel around, get as much out of it as I can this time, and maybe go back when I'm old, but not go back for a long time. I want to finally have that feeling that I've seen, I've seen it, and I don't need to go back. And I've never, like I said before, I never had that feeling before. So that was kind of my approach. Now, at first, I did have those times where I wasn't self-motivated enough, I wasn't pushing myself hard enough, and I ended up staying somewhere a day or two extra that I'm like, why did I even stay here another day? This place is boring. But eventually, I just kind of learned to go at my own pace. And I found that pace is not consistent. Sometimes it's a little faster, sometimes it's a little slower. It just depends on what I've been up to and how tired I am, really.
What a close gap from South America to now. Pretty quickly. Just like, how long you stayed at what place and what you've done.
Okay, we'll do it really quick. Really
and
quick.
Then I want to have a view on, like, on your thoughts, like on the things.
Let's go through. I won't even do stories or anything. I did a trip down the Amazon River from Peru into Brazil, into Manaus. That took like a couple weeks. Then up into Venezuela for about a week to climb a mountain. Then into the Guianas, which are three small, lesser known countries in the northeastern part of the country. Did that for about 2 months. Then down into Brazil for close to 3 months, from north part of the Brazil to the south. And then I crossed the Pantanal back into Bolivia, because I still wasn't done with Bolivia, and I stayed for a couple more months. Then into Peru for about 2 more months, because I just love these places. Then into Ecuador for 2 more months.
Mostly by bus, everything?
Mostly by bus.
Did you ever have a severe diarrhea on a bus?
Not on a bus.
Not on a bus.
Many times. Many, many times.
I just
but not
always
on a
imagine
bus.
What happens.
That would be horrible.
That once happened to me in Vietnam, and it was...
Yeah? On a bus?
I was considering taking a shit into a bottle. That's how...
Oh.
Yeah.
And there's no bathroom on the bus?
There was no bathroom. And we asked the driver to stop, and he said, yeah. But he just didn't understand. My friend just like went to the front again and said, like, you have to stop. And I was like sitting there with severe belly cramps.
Oh, okay.
I just meditated and focused, and it actually worked.
Yeah?
But I was drenched in sweat.
Man, you must be like the Buddha to be able to put that off.
I learned a lot. I got a better person on this bus ride.
Yeah, not on a bus. But in South American buses, there tend to be a bathroom, in at least the medium-end ones. But they do warn you, usually, you're not allowed to defecate in these bathrooms. It's for peeing only.
Okay.
But they will stop for longer breaks. Oh. But still, it would be horrible to have diarrhea on a bus. That's just, you just don't want to do that. And obviously, sometimes you can't avoid it. But luckily, that never happened to me. So anyway, after Ecuador for a couple months, then I went up into Colombia, spent 2.5 months in Colombia, then Venezuela for another month or so. Back into Colombia for another month, then I finally crossed. Then I was done with South America.
Yeah.
Then I finally crossed into Panama, and spent the last 2 months and a bit more going north through Central America. There's 7 countries, and I hit them all. I was going pretty fast by that point because I wanted to get home, and just a couple days in Mexico, and then I flew home. And that was my trip. So it was from 2005 through 2008.
Cool, 4 years. So that means you were 31 when you came back.
It was like late 2005 to earlier 2008. But yeah, I turned 30 a couple weeks after coming back.
Okay, yeah. And then just like settle back in into
yeah,
back in normal life.
I spent about the first month just kind of understanding where I was and getting back into American culture again, and visiting friends, things like that. And
did you like it coming back home? I usually enjoy it when I come back home to Germany.
This time, yes. Yes, I finally could say, yes, I'm ready to come home and not travel for a while. I'm done. I was just over it. Not that I wanted to stop forever, but I just knew I wouldn't be going anywhere for a long time. I was very happy to be home. And after about a month of just kind of visiting people, and I started getting caught up on technology changes. A lot changed while I was gone, and I wanted to get another software engineering job. So I started reading some books on it, put together a resume, and actually this is the thing I was dreading the most, was coming home and trying to find work. And
having this huge gap in your CV.
Yeah, yeah. And for American companies where they don't really have this concept, and maybe don't understand as much as like Europeans might. And it actually didn't take long at all. It just took like a couple weeks, and then I had a job, and then there I was sitting at a desk in Madison, Wisconsin, and working at a job. And then I spent the next 6 years there, and the only time I left the country during those 6 years was Canada, just for like 4 days. So I pretty much stayed in the United States for 6 years straight. And now while I was there, I realized,
because of your job, or
part of it, but I lost my job. I got laid off 4 years into it, so I spent another 2 years just without a job in the States too.
Okay. Just dirtbagging around, or what did you
do? Nah, not dirtbagging, but I wanted to write a book about South America.
Okay.
So I did that. It was the big thing.
It's been published.
Yeah. Yeah. It's called 1,000 Days Between. You can get it on Amazon.
And cool.
I can show you where to pick up a copy. You can tell your friends about it.
Oh, yeah, sure, definitely.
It's all part of my ecosystem of online stuff, and this podcast is part of that too, man.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I'll show you about it. I'll show you it all later. Where was I? So I had a job, and for those last 2 years, even the previous 4 years while I was working, I wanted to get to know my own state, because I realized like I knew where Paraguay was. I knew the Paraguay River, and I met people who speak Guarani and that kind of stuff, but I didn't know much about my own state. And so I did a lot of traveling around. I learned how to whitewater kayak, got into that, got into rock climbing. That was only after I came home that I got into climbing. And just kind of explored a lot. And I went out to, did a few long road trips out to other parts of the country, and I just met a lot of cool people. And I just realized my country is like really awesome, and it's a great place to explore too.
Yeah.
You don't have to go to these faraway lands to.
If you could travel back in time and meet the 22-year-old Dan, what questions would you ask?
What questions would I ask the younger me?
Yes, the younger me.
Well, I probably would already know the answers, wouldn't I? I don't know. Like, what do you want?
Don't give him tips. Don't say go travel.
Yeah.
That's too easy. It's like ask him questions. Why are you doing
this?
Why did you choose your degree?
Right. What do you really want to do?
What's the aim?
What's your real goal in life? Not just what people are telling you. Can you come up with something on your own? Can you do anything for yourself? You know,
that's a question you'd ask.
That's what I'd ask.
Yeah, it definitely gets you thinking. This question.
Yeah. When you're younger.
Yeah.
I think growing up, at least for me, I was kind of always told what to do, and I didn't like that. But I didn't ever think on my own. And that I was missing that part. And so I had to start. It took a long time. I had to start training myself to come up with ideas, to do things on my own without someone else telling me to do it. It's even still, to this day, a little difficult.
There's some days where it's really hard when you've got like all options and you have to make decisions. It's sometimes quite easy when people make decisions for you.
Yeah.
How did you deal with it? You your travels in South America, it just sounded like you could do whatever you liked every day. It's like,
right,
whatever you liked. Did you enjoy this, or was it sometimes difficult? I sometimes really enjoy when I have to get up at 7 o'clock, go to my job, just have an everyday life. I just moan and just complain, but I really actually enjoy this routine. It's good for me because I've had like months where I just didn't have this routine, and it brought out the worst of me. It's like sleeping in, drinking, and
And that,
did you miss routine, having a routine?
I did at times, for sure. And I at times, this sounded so, or maybe it still sounds so weird. I'd be in like Buenos Aires, and I'd see a guy walk by about my age, wearing a suit and a tie and nice shoes, and obviously walking to work or something. And I'd go, "Wow, I want that guy's life. I want to have that." And like, wait, what? No, I could do anything. Why do I want that? I could do whatever I want. And just kind of realizing that, no, I can't have that mentality that whatever I have, I need something else. No, this is where I want to be now. Mm-hmm. And it took a long time for me to get into that. But the routine thing, I think at first I was clinging on to other people too much. And I'd
people you met?
Yeah. I'd go to a hostel. Right. I'd go to a hostel. I found it so easy to meet other travelers, and we'd always ask the same kind of questions, like, where are you going? Where have you been? And how long have you been traveling? Mm. And
you were always the cool guy, traveling for 2 years.
No. At first it was like, well, I just got here. A month ago I was working at IBM, and now I'm here in Peru. I don't know what to do. And so, no, I wasn't the cool guy at all. I was this brand new person, and everybody's got to start somewhere, though, right? So people would tell me, yeah, I want to go to this other village or this town, and I'd go along with them, and I'd always cling to other people. And that was kind of my way out of sitting in one place forever, just wondering what I'm doing with my life. But then as time went on, the way I got out of it is, I thought, not in terms of what I'm going to do next or what I'm going to do today or tomorrow, but go maybe make a monthly plan. Like, okay, I plan to spend roughly 2 months here, a couple months there. Okay, how long does that put me on the road? And by, once I was about a year into it, I felt like I really had the system down of how to pack my backpack, what kind of stuff I wanted to carry. I wasn't constantly thinking, oh, I wish I didn't have this big heavy thing. I wish I had something else. No, I thought, okay, I have exactly what I want. This is how I want to do it. And here's what I want to do with the rest of my trip. About a year into it is when I started thinking that. But for that first year, I wasn't thinking that at all. I was like drifting more.
How did you keep your brain busy when you're traveling?
Boy, that's kind of hard, especially at first. I remember trekking through Torres del Paine. That was my first big trek. That was 8 days, I think, and it was a little over 100 Ks. And I went through long stretches where I wasn't talking to anybody, because in the back of this park there's very few people, and I was with two other people, but we didn't necessarily talk all day. And just the things that would go through my head for hours and hours. And
I'm sometimes scared of just being by myself, just like the thoughts, and I just need distraction.
Right, the thoughts
good
can get to
good distractions, like having a job, like this routine thing.
Yeah,
using your brain in a good way, it's like being productive. And I sometimes had the feeling when I was traveling, I was not very productive. So it's like, went to bed and thought like, you actually really didn't deserve your dinner. You haven't done anything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this must have occurred many times. So you've been on the road for months. That's why I just like find it hard to believe that it's always nice being on your own traveling.
It's not always nice. Yeah, there's really low points. I mean, on the road, for me, the highs were much higher than they were at home, but the lows were much lower. I mean, I went through periods where I was really lonely and really sad, and just wanted to go home at times. And I just missed what began to wear me out over time was, I'd meet someone for like 3 days and they're really cool people, and I thought like, wow, I could be really good friends with this person, but then they'd go away and I'd never see them again. And this would constantly happen over and over and over, and I never had that deeper level friendship that I might have gotten at home, that I did get at home. That wore me out over time. So I don't know. The whole, I don't know what we're talking about. The whole thing with routine, it's kind of hard to even sum it up. That I the way I would sum it up is this: everyone's different, and everyone's got kind of their own way of getting out of the bad times and making sure they're in good times. And my way won't necessarily work for anybody else, but the way that you figure out how you're going to do it is by just going and just understanding there's going to be low points, there's going to be high points. I still go through large periods of frustration. I'm not like this Zen guy who is constantly just chill. I'm still not. I'd love to be more chill, but like even just 2 days ago, we were talking about coming to this remote place from the town that we were in, and we thought, because it's India, there's just a lot of things take so much longer than they would at home, and we were trying to organize our gear, organize a ride out here, and organize our food, and with the big traffic jams, and it was overwhelming, and it was seriously looking like we'd have to wait another day to get out here. And I thought, God, I'm just gonna spend another day here. And it was kind of a low point for me, actually. I was kind of getting anxious. It's like I've been here 5 days. I want to get going. I want to do something else. Yeah. And this constantly happens. So I still don't even have a great answer for you of how to make sure that you're always relaxed or something. But when you're traveling in less developed countries, just everything takes painfully long, even things that you would think are very normal, easy tasks.
Yeah, you just have to stop comparing.
Yeah, you can't think of it in terms of, well, it would work this way at home. That you'll pull your hair out if you're doing that. It just won't work. Mm-hmm. Even in terms of money, I mean, we found out yesterday morning we were trying to get this bus out here. The bus just didn't come. It was a 10:30 bus. By 11, we realized, well, there is no bus. Okay, when's the next bus? Noon? We don't want to wait that long. Let's just hire a taxi. And it's going to cost a lot more money, but it'll at least get us out here. And then we figured out you need permission to take a taxi, and getting permission takes 2 hours. And it's like, we can't even buy our way out of this situation. Yeah, it's even with our money. And that's where, in the developing world, sometimes you can't even throw money at a problem and it fixes itself. Sometimes there is no solution. And that's the most maddening thing. We're just...
My personality develops in this situation. It's really great. Yeah. I just grow with the situation.
It's how you grow as a person.
You just can't change it. You're
never going to grow as a person if you're always in the same routine. So while those routines are productive and are great at times,
you have to leave the comfort zone. Otherwise, you get a dull person.
Yeah. You can't, if you're always just comfortable. You just don't grow. I mean, I'm not saying that I have the greatest stories in the world. I'm not saying I'm this great adventurer. I haven't broken any world records, anything like that. But I've just kind of, I really feel, for me personally, I feel that I've developed as a person a lot since I took off. Mm-hmm. And let's just say in those 5 years that I was at IBM, I didn't feel myself developing much. Mm-hmm. I felt that I was the same person, but 5 years older. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like I'm a new person, a different person. And I'm continuously trying to grow.
Traveling destroy your life?
Did destroy my life? Like, financially? Or
that's like, do you think it could have been a mistake when you're like 60-year-old and you, or let's say 50-year-old, and biology kicks in, you just want to have children and so on?
Yeah.
It's like, maybe I should have like traveled for 2 years and then go back to IBM?
I don't think...
Have a house, some financial, I don't know... Buffer.
Some security. Yeah. I hope that's not going to happen. I don't think it'll be that way. I think I'll be satisfied with how things went. And if anything, I'll wish I had traveled more.
Yeah.
It's I don't know. I've owned some nice stuff. If you read my book, I used to own a Corvette, and it was cool and all. But I could take that money and travel for a year, you know, instead of having that car. And I get a lot more out of it when I travel.
So you've been to the US, back to the US, had a job for 4 years, then just like bummed around for 2 years. And
wrote a book.
You wrote a book.
Yeah.
And then you went to China.
Yep. Yeah, great question. I was dating my girlfriend, Katie, and we both lived in Madison. And she
wrote 2 years in a book? How slowly did you write?
Oh, I even worked part-time before that. It's such, well, part of it was... I didn't really know how to write when I started, and I just kind of thought, oh, I'll just write this book. And I'd take writing samples and send it to some people, and then it would just be full of red marks. Just everything's got to change. And that was after I worked on it for a while and thought it was pretty good. And it was maddening for me. I'm very, very slow when I write. Thank you for pointing that out to me. I'm glad you point out my flaws. That's something I need to work on. Because I've been working on my second book for a couple of years. And
why do you write books? Do you think people are interested in your story?
I used to think they would be. I think not so much anymore. I think people tend to see themselves in any story. And I guess my hope is that I could get my book out to more people and they'd not necessarily use it as a guidebook or something like for their own lives, but just to
gain
inspiration.
Many people like taking photos of their adventures or writing books. They say it's like want to get people inspired, and I'm always very critical about it. I'm just like, it's somewhere between bragging and getting people inspired, and I'm always wondering where between these two extremes people actually are.
Yeah,
I've got a friend that takes a lot of photos, shares them on Facebook. They're nice photos. They make me jealous when I sit at the desk doing my job, but I think she's not doing it for herself. She's just like doing it to impress people.
Why do you get that feeling? Is she in every one of them?
Nah, it's like basically the statements that come with the photos are two great weeks on Kalymnos and things like, it's a nice thing for you, but why should people be interested? Maybe people are interested. Maybe I'm just jealous. That's why I'm so critical about it.
Ah, okay. I think...
But maybe I'm almost very reluctant sharing my stories.
Are you?
I upload sometimes one picture on Facebook, a really nice picture, which is like a good picture, but I just don't post updates, I don't write blogs.
Yeah, I'm
like, I don't really share, but people actually enjoy when somebody shares something. So what did you make write a book?
I guess when I first started writing it, I thought partly because of inspiration, partly just because I want... This is a new goal of mine. I'm pretty goal oriented. My goal was to travel. Now my goal is to write a book. It's this big picture thing that I had. And then, honestly, when I got a couple years into it, I almost gave up a few times, and I just keep pushing myself because I think I've just got to finish this thing. And it's definitely been a drag at times. Like I could be doing so many other things. Why am I writing this damn book? No one's even going to read it. No one cares. I've had those thoughts constantly, and it's hard for me to even pinpoint what motivates me to continue, because at times it is that bad, and I don't know. I might not ever do another one. It's partly because if I keep a journal too, and that's just for me, and that's honestly for me, that's really enough. So there's got to be something else, some other motivation, and sometimes I don't see it. But then there's other times where someone reads my book and they go,
I really enjoy when people share their stories. I'm just like, somehow I just don't want to do it because I'm afraid of people thinking of me that I try to impress them. So I rather not do it. I've had like this one experience. I once rode a motorbike alone to Kazakhstan, and the way back I actually wanted to go to India. But it was once not possible to get a visa for Tibet, so I just like did half the way and drove back, did this all by myself. Had like cool stories in the Caucasian mountains, some cool stories in Russia. So it was like, for many people, like a once in a lifetime experience. For me, it was like a cool motorcycle trip. I came home and there were three middle-aged men. They did like a tour which was half as cool as mine, and they just toured like the south of Germany. And I thought, like, what kind of dickheads are you? And then I thought, like, okay, I think my story is cool. But then there's like another guy who does this on his bicycle with heavy rucksacks in winter, and then after that climbs Mount Everest, and I think it's like, Ben's like, who are you trying to impress? But I came back and everyone's like said, please, Ben, share your story, and like made a little presentation and like friends. But just like friends level, and they really enjoyed it. So I'm not criticizing you for writing a book. I just ask you for the motivation, and I think it's actually nice for people to share stories if it's done for, let's say, a good reason, and like if you not start bragging. I think that's for me very important.
Yeah,
that you just like stay humble.
Yeah. Well, I kind of think it's hard to brag in book form, honestly, because like if you want to brag about your story, go on Facebook. It's so much easier. Just do a post, and then you get 100 likes right away, and then everyone likes you, yay. And writing a book, it's like,
sitting
in your basement for years, and no one even knows about you, and no one cares, and then you put it out, and now it's like, oh, I gotta pay $3 for this thing? No, I'm not gonna do that. Yeah. I don't even know this guy, and like, it's so much more. It's thousands of times more work than putting
naked skin on Facebook and photos.
Very easy
solution.
And I still don't have as many fans as someone would have who just spent 2 weeks in Germany and put it up on Facebook. It's really a terrible if you just want to brag, writing a book is about the worst thing you can do. Mm-hmm. And I've thought of giving up so many times, like I said. But sometimes someone reads my book. Like recently, some guy did, and he said, wow, this is just really nice. It was a really good book. And I'd love to go to South America now. It's really inspiring. And that kind of thing keeps me going. But those come few and far between. So one of the reasons why I'm so slow at this is because I keep going off and doing other things. Like right now I'm in India. I'm not writing my book. Earlier I was traveling around China. I wasn't writing my book. And I keep having these distractions come up. Good distractions, but
let's go back to China.
Yeah,
you're away from America, China. How does this happen?
Oh yeah, we were talking about that. I was so my girlfriend is a teacher, and she spent before we met. She spent 2 years teaching in Berlin at an international school, and she just loved it, and she wanted to kind of go do that again. And that's she wasn't making a lot of money as a teacher, so she found it harder to save enough to just take off for a year or something. And
so you decided to become a teacher?
So I decided no, not exactly. So but the cool thing is with a teacher you get the summer off, so you can travel a lot then. So she wanted to go do this international gig again, and now that she has this experience it wasn't really hard at all to get a job. So we went together to a job fair, and we went there not knowing where we'd end up. And so she interviewed with schools from around the world. She probably did like 8 initial interviews in one day, like 30 minutes each. Mm-hmm. A bunch of them called her back. She got 3 different job offers, and she had to decide where to spend the next 2 years of her life right there at that weekend, because they just had to know right away. And so we talked it over in the hotel room that night and decided on China, that was the best offer. The other two were from one was from Kosovo, which sounded pretty cool. The money wasn't as good, and it's also she's been to a lot of Europe already and wasn't so interested in it.
Furthermore, it's Kosovo.
Yeah, furthermore, it's Kosovo. What a lesser traveled place for sure, but
for a good reason.
I've been there. So
it's just around to it, Bosnia.
So you think it was a good decision to skip it?
Oh yeah, I think there's like not so much you get out of it. I think China's more exotic, more exciting to travel in Kosovo. I love Eastern Europe, Kosovo, Albania, this region, it's different. It's not the most exciting part of Europe.
Okay.
So
we agree. So yeah. Then that one was kind of out right away. So it was between South Korea, Busan, South Korea, and then Beijing, China. And Busan was a really nice offer too. South Korea obviously is a very developed country, and it's kind of a little bit isolated. Obviously it borders North Korea, but other than that, you have to fly or take long ferries if you want to travel anywhere. And there were a few other reasons, but there were just a few downsides to South Korea. But the biggest thing I think was that we wanted something really different and something that would be a bigger challenge for both of us. And that was China. So we decided on Beijing, China, and flew there. And obviously China's hard. There's a lot of bad days, but there's so many good days that overall it's been a really great experience. So that's been the last 2 years.
Did you get ever robbed on your travels or mugged?
Yeah, it's great. Funny thing you should ask. I just got my phone stolen. On my way out of my apartment to the train that would take me to the airport in Beijing. It's about a 10-minute walk. I make that walk all the time. Someone pickpocketed me and took my phone. And so now I had to get on. I found out right away it was gone. and I don't know how.
That's the only thing in so many years of traveling?
No, there's one other story I can tell you. But at that...
I want to hear gun stories and knives and stuff.
Oh, all right.
Be blindfolded in a taxi.
I don't have that. I do have a gun story.
Gun story, cool. Yeah. I want to hear the gun story.
All right. Next time on the podcast. No, okay. We've been talking for almost an hour. Yeah, but yeah. We'll do the gun story.
The gun story and I think then.
Yeah, okay.
Like, nice.
All right. Let me see if I can remember it because it's been a few years. I was in Mendoza, Argentina. And I was staying with a couple that were Americans living there. And I had met them in Ushuaia before going to Antarctica. So I visited them at their apartment. They said, hey, let's go hiking to... There's this hill outside of the city, and it has a bunch of radio antennas on top of it. And it just gives you a great look out over the city. And to describe Mendoza briefly, it's one of the nicest cities in Argentina.
I've only heard the best about a city.
Yeah, it's the main wine producing region of Argentina. Yeah. So you may have seen Mendoza wine. It's near the tallest mountain in South America, and
which is Aconcagua.
Aconcagua, yep, almost 7,000 meters tall.
6,800 and something.
Ah, you got it. Okay, so
I just heard about a girl that ran up the mountain from 2,000 meters in 24 hours.
God, wow, that's pretty extreme. Mm. Anyway, it's a beautiful area. It's an affluent city. It was one of these times I just felt totally comfortable. Mm. So it was us three, and then one other girl was with us too, who I was traveling with at the time. And we started hiking on this trail, and there weren't a lot of people. It was a Sunday, and normally there'd be a lot of people out on Sunday. So that was a little strange, but we didn't really think anything of it. And partway up, the one girl decided it was just too hot for her. It was too tiring of a walk. She just wanted to write in her journal. So she got next to the trail, leaned against a rock, started writing in her journal. And the three of us continued, the Americans and I. And we got near the top, and we kind of just stopped for a little break, looking out over the city. It was a beautiful view. And then all of a sudden, two guys started almost running up toward us. And it was like, oh, there's more people. We haven't seen people in a while. And then I noticed they had masks over their faces. And I was like, oh, shit, they have masks. And what's going on? And my brain was trying to process this. And then I noticed they were holding at their side guns. I'm like, oh, my God, we're about to be robbed. And I almost started laughing. I thought it was hilarious. Because I'd never been robbed before. And it's weird. You don't know how you're going to react in these situations. Yeah. And I just kind of stood there. And they're like, yeah,
always good fun being attacked by guns. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, they're like, okay, give us your stuff, and they're speaking in Spanish, and right away the other two kind of got on the ground, the two Americans, and I was just standing there, and the guy pointed the gun at me and went like, get down, like I'm robbing you, you can't just stand there, you have to get like on your knees or something. So I got down, and I had my nice camera at the time in my backpack, my just day pack. There's no way they saw it because I didn't even have it out. But they just took my backpack. I'm like, oh, damn. But then they asked us, do you guys have passports or anything on you? Because we don't want to take those. And we're
all
like,
nice guys, actually.
Yeah, really nice guys. We said no. We didn't have our passports. And they took the girl's wedding ring off. And she said to them, please don't take my wedding ring. It's very important to me, but it's not worth any money. And they said, oh, well, is it gold or is it silver? And just looking at it, you could tell it was gold. It was gold. And she said, oh, it's silver. And they said, oh, okay. Gave the ring back to her. And then they started, they were about to walk away, and they had our water bottle too. They took our water bottle, and we didn't have any water. And so the guy that was with us said, like, hey, can we have our water back, please? And they said, oh, yeah, here. And they threw it back to him. And then they just said, the last thing they said was tranquilo, which means tranquil or keep calm.
Yeah.
And they just walked away. And I could kind of tell they didn't want to kill us. They just wanted to rob us.
Yeah.
And obviously, because they had the masks on, they wanted to hide their identities. But while I was on the ground, I looked up at the one guy who was robbing us, and he was wearing shorts, and on his calf there was a tattoo, a blue tattoo, and it was of a guy smoking a cigarette, and it was just his head, and he was wearing a hat, like a cowboy hat, smoking a cigarette, and there was smoke coming out of it. And so I kind of like analyzed this tattoo and for later, right? And then the other thing I thought of was they threw us that water bottle back. Maybe we could get their fingerprints off of it. So this is kind of the thinking I was doing. Mm-hmm. Well, we waited for them to get down the hill a ways, out of sight, and we just kind of sat there going like, what the hell just happened? We just got robbed. And like, I lost my camera. The other guy lost his camera. Other than that, we just lost a few bucks, but my camera was worth a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to get a police report. Because I had insurance, so I wanted to get the money for my camera. So we started walking down after them. After that happened, we passed this couple that we had passed on the way up. We passed them again and told them that we had gotten robbed. And they were like, oh, God, we got robbed too. They got us too. Like, oh, really? Well, did they take everything? And he said, well, the three of us that were together didn't have phones or anything, but that guy did. They said, well, he took my phone, he took the battery out, and he just chucked it as far as he could, and then he just gave me my phone back. It's just so we couldn't call the cops. I'm like, oh, all right. Did they take any money? Yeah, they took our money, but they didn't take this. And he held up this clear plastic bag, and in it was a dollar bill. And like, it said, why didn't they take the dollar, American dollar, $1 bill? Why didn't they take that? And he said, oh, they didn't realize that's money. So these guys weren't very smart. They did a lot of things really dumb, but they had guns and that kind of, that changes everything, right? You can't really do much.
It sounded like you stayed rather cool.
Yeah, all things considered, we stayed cool. So we picked up the girl who had gone off to write in her diary. They never saw her, and she was like, I never would have given my journal, they would have had to kill me first. I'm like, really?
No.
You think that's true? So the four of us were together again. We were really worried about the girl because she was all alone, and we're like, oh my god, what if they see her alone, what are they going to do to her? But they never even saw her somehow. So the four of us were together. The two others called their a friend that they knew, and they were hysterical. They came and picked us up, and they said, oh, we're so sorry this happened, because they were from Argentina. This isn't our country. This isn't what it's like here. We're really sorry.
It can happen basically anywhere.
Yeah, it can happen anywhere. But they drove us to the police station, and this is kind of the final part of the story. So we went to file the police report, and I went in and tried talking to the guy. He said, okay, tell me what happened, or tell me your name and all that. And said, okay, tell me what happened. I started describing the story to him. And up above us, hanging from the ceiling, there was a TV. And on the TV, there was a soccer game. And the soccer game was between Boca Junior and River Plate, which are the two biggest teams in Argentina by far. They're both from Buenos Aires. And this is the biggest rivalry you have in soccer, football soccer in Argentina. It's a gigantic rivalry. It's like religion to them.
You're not coming back to the tattoo, are you?
Oh, I'll get there.
Very curious about that.
So I'll get there. So on the TV there was this soccer game, and I realized this is a live game, and this is a super important match, and that must be why no one was outside hiking on this trail. Normally it'd be totally busy and it'd be fine. There's no way they could rob you. And that's why we got robbed. And then I was telling the guy what happened, and I said, I was trying to tell him about the tattoo, and I was trying to describe it to him. But every time I started, he went, hey, look at the TV. Hey, look, do you know who that is? That's Maradona. That guy, that's Maradona. I'm like, yeah, I know that's Maradona. Listen to me. We got robbed. I want to describe this tattoo. It's really important. He said, yeah, whatever. And he wasn't even writing anything down. And I'm like, no, you write this down. You can find this guy who did this by getting his tattoo. And he's like, ah, fine. And I'm like, please stop watching this football match for 5 minutes and do your job. So I had to like pry his eyes off of the TV. Finally, he just scribbled a couple of little details about the tattoo. I pretty much knew they weren't going to do anything about it, but I wanted to try. But anyway, that's the whole reason we got robbed. And even the police were so focused on the game they couldn't even like talk to me for 5 minutes. That's basically all that happened. And I fought with my insurance company for 6 months and finally got my money. But
so good experience basically in the end.
Well, Yeah, inexperience fun. Anyway. Yeah. Anything that doesn't kill you, I guess, is all right. But yeah, that's the only time I've been really robbed. And when I got my phone pickpocketed, that's the first time I've been pickpocketed. So other than that, just a few times getting shortchanged on things that happen all the time. Very, very little has happened to me. The story I just told, though, I actually don't even like telling that story, so I had to kind of think back to what happened when I told it, because I don't mind telling you, Ben, because I know you're like, you have good motivations for asking me, probably, but a lot of people just want, they ask me if I've been robbed just because they want to justify not going somewhere.
Yeah. And people ask me the same story, and then I tell of once being robbed and like beaten unconscious, and this was like in the city center of Stuttgart.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
It's like two guys, it's like on drugs, approached me. It's like, give me sunglasses, and said, like, nah, I'm sorry. And it's like, the last thing I saw was a fist, and it's like, it passed out, and they got my phone and my sunglasses. And it was like in the middle of one of the richest cities in Germany. So basically, it can happen anywhere. It should not be an excuse.
Right. Yeah, it shouldn't be an excuse not to go somewhere. I mean, that's exactly right. It can happen anywhere. Yeah, certain places are more dangerous than others.
Oh, yeah, you shouldn't, like, ask for it. There's places in Africa, like, where the political situation is very difficult. Also, maybe Afghanistan, Pakistan, there's places where people not just want your money, they just want to kill you, just because you're different religion. When you go to Afghanistan, maybe wrong places, or Pakistan. So be careful traveling these countries.
There are pockets of that.
Yeah.
I found the best way to get info, though, is to talk to people and talk to people who have just been there, and they can usually give you some good insight into what the situation is like, better than CNN can, or better than even the US embassy in some cases.
And definitely don't check the internet, or just be very careful with information from the internet.
Yeah, because
try to verify it. There's so many people, so many scared people just writing about stuff they don't really know.
Yeah, or don't understand thoroughly, or there's a ton of that, and I mean, I'm guilty of that myself sometimes, but that's one of my motivations for travel, is because I want to see what the world really looks like, and not what this kind of view is of the from the Western world's perspective. And that's, China gives me a lot of really interesting experiences, because it's just such a different culture that they just have a really different way of looking at a lot of everyday things. And the only way to really get an even remote understanding for it is just to go there and experience it for yourself. But yeah, that's basically it.
Cool. Thanks for sharing your story. Long story in 1 hour.
Yeah, no, it's actually been a little over an hour, but it's been great talking to you, Ben.
Yeah, thanks. It's interesting.
Okay, until next time. See you later, folks.
Drink Old Monk.
Oh, yes.
In India, this show is being sponsored by Old Monk, smoothest rum in India.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information, you can visit my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. From there, you can sign up to get updates from this podcast delivered directly to your inbox. Remember, the Around the World podcast is all about meeting ordinary people who have done extraordinary things. Thanks for listening.